Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July the 8th on the West Coast. That's Friday night, and July the 9th, early Saturday morning on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome anyone listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, and hope you all find tonight's show informative. As I was listening to my intro music, I said, when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. I didn't say what I said in that introduction of the show to describe what the show entails on a night-to-night basis, Monday through Friday, or Tuesday through Saturday, depending on where you are in the world hearing this. But to really intend to break this paradigm, this belief system that the world is living in, and it's amazing how much of an effort is put into putting out disinformation on the internet. In the simplest of ways, it's done. On some past shows this week, we've been exposing who is behind some of the attacks that a number of talk show hosts and many who are also journalists or authors have been experiencing because of the amount of truth that has come out. And this isn't just recently that the truth has been coming out. And it isn't just recently that they've been sicking their lapdogs on us to try to get us to fall for whatever story they want to tell us, how much we're supported, how much they love our show, how much they love the work we're doing. And if the work we're doing is not having any impact on the masses, it really doesn't matter anything that they say. It's nice to know that occasionally there is a genuine person out there that has a real name and a real phone number and a real address and a real family. They drive a real car. They live in a real town. They go to a real church. Their kids go to real schools. You get the idea. And then there are these fictions that have invaded the internet from top to bottom, as they have the media for well over 50 years, 60, 70 years. With the advent of TV, there's nothing but mindless propaganda asking you to buy this and to buy that. And nobody seems to be bothered by that. Do you realize that you pay, those of you that pay for cable or satellite TV, which it's all been directed now through those channels. There are no free TV channels anymore. If you want to watch TV, you have to pay for it. And you subscribe to a movie channel or a sports channel, and anywhere from an eighth of the day to maybe a third of the day is spent on nothing but infomercials and commercials. So you're paying for them to control your mind, for them to indoctrinate you into this commercial system that they call free enterprise. But there's nothing free about it. There's nothing free about the internet. And when they came out with it, I distinctly recall that Al Gore, who said he invented the internet, and, you know, we know that's a joke. Don't take that seriously. If you believe that Al Gore invented the internet, you're on the wrong planet. Okay. If you believe there's global warming, you're on the wrong planet. If you believe there's peak oil, you're on the wrong planet. They use the media to put out these stories, and the internet is no exception. But there's a difference. You can track the corruption that is on the internet unlike tracking the corruption that's on the mainstream media, on the TV, it's a little bit more difficult there because it's a more of a good old boys club. But it's very easy because there are so many entrepreneurs on the internet that are putting out any kind of information. Everybody's trying to sell you something. They're trying to sell you their services that are supposed to be free. Everybody was supposed to have free internet. And it's the furthest thing away from free. In fact, the TV networks and the internet outlets controlled by the intelligence agencies are the most expensive on the planet. And all they do is put out disinformation about who owns the website, where they're located, on and on. And I'm discovering some things that are just so off the charts, shows exactly the methodology that I've been talking about for years, all in a nutshell. There's one particular website that's putting out propaganda alleging that there's something being done about the birth certificate in Hawaii, that finally something's going to happen. And we've already discovered lies and mistakes that they made in these phony documents that these people are alleging are official court documents and posted on the internet. And I tracked down the address of the website of this alleged I'm not going to name them yet. I have a good reason not to name them, but the alleged publisher of this information is located in a house, and there are 82 businesses registered at that house with 82 different phone numbers. Now, is that a reality that we experience in everyday life? We're talking about a house that's 1,732 square feet. As it's listed in the public records. And there are 82 companies or 82 individuals tied to a group of companies. Maybe it's not 82. It might only be 70. Okay. Because some of the company names are repeated, but it's all in real estate, insurance, investment banking, internet services, photography. All the stuff that you see people doing to put scams on the internet and pull the wool over people's eyes, all at the same residential address in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now, this is going to ring a bell to the people that know that they've done this, okay? They know I'm telling the truth about this. But why say that you're located in Connecticut when you're in Cheyenne, Wyoming? And why say you're doing this in Cheyenne, Wyoming, when you're doing it in Florida and in California or Houston, Texas? The money laundering and the corruption and the way you're being lied to about what's going on, not just in this country, but in this world, is unimaginable. Unimaginable. And you're paying for this. You do some small little infraction that their little rule book says that you violated one of their laws, and all I see is total corruption from top to bottom. This stuff ties in, you know, you're talking about major court cases involving the President of the United States, who himself is an infiltrator, illegally in the country, let alone he's the president. He shouldn't even be on the planet. So we're going to talk tonight about technology, and maybe we'll touch upon some of these other topics, you know, because this nuclear thing has not died down, and there are some other developments out there, but I have to even question the validity of some of the information we're going to discuss tonight because of who is generating this information and on whose behalf it's being generated. It all fits the same MO. It's a mold. And it has mold on it too. Okay? It's a moldy mold that's being used everywhere. And I'm tired of listening to the rhetoric and the lies from the politicians. We know who's pulling the strings of the finances of the world. These people are running, cutting and running from the responsibility, because the axe handle is in sight, and the blade follows that. And they know that pretty soon they're going to get their head chopped off. When are people going to grow up and realize the responsibility they have as a human being on planet Earth and take life, the gift of life, with some sense of appreciation and responsibility? When is that going to happen? I asked that question rhetorically. Maybe we'll get an answer on that and some of these other issues, some insights and perceptions from tonight's guest. He is my weekly co-host on Evident Footprints and has been for the past 4 years. He is our resident science advisor. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and my good, good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show. And I hope you're still with us, Jim, because I'm not hearing you.
I'm right here. I said hello twice.
Okay, didn't hear you. I don't know if Seth had your sound down or what. Okay, how are you?
Well, it's been a long week. Let me put it to you that way. But other than that, I'm okay. Good to be with you.
Okay. Pick any topic you want to talk about, since I just vented here and ranted for a few moments. Anything you'd like to share with us, your thoughts on what I have to say?
I was listening to the part of your rant, as you called it, where you were talking about the validity of some of the information that's being released. Now, I read two reports this past week. One came from an associate of mine in China, and the other one was sent to me anonymously, so I can't tell you who that was from. But they both covered the same interesting story about a nuclear research engineer who worked for General Electric, and apparently he was in the reactor development division. And when he retired, he felt that he was no longer under the influence of whatever promises he made for security and what have you. And so he wanted to report on an incident which he thought was very interesting, and that it should be made common knowledge. And basically what he was saying was that the scientists at the GE nuclear division had effectively closed the nuclear loop. Now, what did he mean by that? Well, his definition was as follows. When you have nuclear material, like, let's say, enriched uranium, and it's in these fuel rods, which are put into a normal power reactor, like a boiling water reactor, for instance, they can liberate huge quantities of heat for a number of years, and then they fall into the category of what they call spent fuel. Now, the interesting thing is, there's no real control over this, but if you figure that uranium is 238, or 235, but I don't think they use 235 in a pure state for nuclear reactors. But anyway, whatever isotope you want to talk about, if it disintegrates by common fission, let's say it breaks into two equal halves or something similar to that, you know. So now you're talking about elements. 92 is uranium, so you're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of 45, 46, 47. Those elements are actually in the transition metal series. 47, I think, is silver. And palladium is another one, and rhodium, for instance, is another one. Now, I might be wrong about that because I'm not a practicing physicist. But anyway, just for the sake of argument and explaining this article, let's assume that these things break down into elements in that range, which happen to be reactive isotopes. So what happens is these things are distributed randomly throughout the fuel rods, and there's a factor called the neutron cross-section of the of the fuel and also the nuclear density of the fuel. And those two things have to be within a certain range to have a sustained reaction. So when these fuel rods reach the category that are referred to as being spent, it doesn't mean there's no more uranium left. What it means is that the spotty distribution of these fractured isotopes is sprinkled around in there enough to interfere with the nuclear density and the neutron cross-section of the material, and so it can't continue undergoing fission. And what this gentleman was saying was that those rods can then be removed from a standard reactor, put into a totally different type of reactor, which will actually cause some kind of a nuclear reaction with the atomic fractions of the uranium that are left. It will burn them out of the fuel rod, and in the process release additional energy. Then that material that's left is the true unspent uranium, which can then be repackaged in new fuel rods, put back into the original reactor, and have a second shot at that life, you might say. And this apparently can be done depending on the degree of enrichment from the first set of fuel rods. This can be done anywhere from 10 to 15 times before the process is completely dead. And if that was to actually happen, two things of interest occur. First of all, the cost of electricity generated by nuclear means would become insignificantly small. I mean, you're talking about, something that can run, for many, many years on a renewable cycle like that without the overhead of charging new rods, storing radioactive waste, and going through all that nonsense. The second feature that was highlighted is the fact that once you do this as many times as it's permissible by nature, what you wind up with in the very end is something that's truly spent, and essentially they're all benign, non-radioactive isotopes that you can just toss in the junk heap somewhere without any concern for human health. Now, I find that to be a little bit optimistic because some of them are dreadfully poisonous from a chemical standpoint, but at least they wouldn't be radioactive according to this guy's proclamation. So anyway, the problem that I have with all of that is it sounds really interesting if you look at it superficially, but I really would like to know what kind of reactor can sustain a secondary fission process with something that is so far below the fissional mass of let's say, uranium U-235 or 238. And if there is such a thing, it couldn't be self-sustaining in the normal way. It would have to be driven, like with a plutonium-beryllium neutron source or something like that. Now, that's not to say it couldn't be done. I would never want to be guilty of having a closed mind, but it just sounds like a really fantastic story. But let's assume for the moment that it's true. The point of the whole thing is that, first of all, this was, if it's true, it was accomplished in a General Electric research lab. The report from this successful experiment went to President at the time, who was supposedly Jimmy Carter, and after he and his cronies had the opportunity to review this report on this nuclear discovery, He promptly wrote an executive order to squelch the whole project and stop the funding. Now, that part I believe, because God forbid there should be any progress in any direction. But the whole point in me bringing this up is twofold, really. First of all, here's another example, if it's true, of another suppressed technology, which could have been a great benefit to this country if it was allowed to happen. The second issue is you've got another participating president who is more interested in holding progress back than he is in assisting the country he supposedly took an oath to uphold and protect. And third of all, you then have the issue that you brought up, Don, which is, even if the original story had some merit to it, you don't know what to believe after these unusual journalists get a hold of the information and decide to massage it into shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm handing the ball back to you with that remark.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a question or two in a moment, but I do want to comment on what you just said, because that's alluding to the fact that this is an individual who came out with his own version of the events that occurred in Japan, and we know without a doubt what happened in Japan, and they're trying to cover that up. So the purpose of this individual coming out with news stories that seem to support what we're saying but don't allude to any of the processes that you and I, Ken Adachi, and Z.S. Livingstone have alluded to for the past several months on this show. More than once a week, we've been talking about this. At least twice a week, we've been discussing some aspect of what has gone on in Japan. And, of course, that just unravels a whole Pandora's box of stuff that they've been trying to cover up for thousands of years on this planet, for 13,000 years. There's the biggest secret of all has been exposed consistently. And so to discredit us, to debunk us, they come out with another story. Suddenly you would think this guy just won American Idol, or he rode the winning horse at the Kentucky Derby, or he won the race in Indianapolis. That's, you know, or the Super Bowl. It doesn't matter. No one's ever seen a word that this guy has published as a journalist. But what the record shows is that he's involved with naval intelligence. In fact, his presentation looks almost like a government website. Background and all. Dark blue matte finish, like Navy, like the water, the deep blue sea. And his alluding to, okay, it's real easy to say, well, I talked to an 85-year-old nuclear engineer that worked on the Manhattan Project and worked for GE and feels he has a duty to come out with this information. What is different about this process? And all that aside, you know, if we use some logic and ask some questions, what is so different about this process that makes it more economical than the one they're using now? Is it because there are really no meltdowns occurring? Is it really because the nuclear power plants that have allegedly suffered a meltdown were sabotaged with suitcase nukes like we described and like the evidence shows? Or is it because it's an advancement that can be used for, you know, if it's going to take billions of years for this stuff to exercise its half-life, to complete its half-life, Is it a limitless supply of energy for that reason? And why does it have to go to that stage? You see, well, it doesn't fit a Ponzi scheme. The same story that you're alluding to also alleges that Germany and France were trying to buy the spent fuel rods from various nuclear facilities here in the United States, that they want to use those. And any thoughts on that in terms of cost versus the new cost?
Well, look at it this way. If you can fuel a reactor, let's say, with 100 rods, and I don't really know how many they take, but at a cost of, I don't know, pick a number, $5 million, let's say. And then, you know, once they're spent after 2 years of running, that's the end of them. Well, then you have to spend another $5 million. But if you can essentially take those same spent rods, put them into a different reactor, burn out the nuclear fission waste products in the liberation of additional heat, and run that for, let's say, a year or so, and then wind up with essentially what's left would then be the unburnt uranium from the first purchase. So let's say you only get 50% back of the original, but you have just gotten another year out of burning the waste material, which is normally inaccessible. Then you would only have to buy, let's say, $2.5 million worth of new fuel to replenish the entire rod and put it back into the original reactor. And according to the article, this could be done, you know, 10 or 15 times before everything was just completely wasted out.
But every time you're going
to
use it.
If any of that has any merit to it, obviously it's more economical.
Yeah, but the key statement you made is you have to put it in a different reactor. So this is going to be more billions of dollars spent on building these new reactors.
According to this report, they had already done all of that. They're all designed and built, and they tried this system. But I don't know what the other reactor is. That wasn't something that was explained.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, that's a key issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can tell you from the days when I was involved in nuclear work that you can have various types of geometric core arrangements in reactors, which are known as subcritical assemblies. And what that means is that they can sit there all day long and move to a darn thing. They're water pool type reactors, or some of them are even sealed water, high pressure reactors, but they won't do anything. They won't raise the temperature of the water one iota until you put what they call a, I forget the right name for it, but anyway, it's like a an exciter of a sort. And what they use is a beryllium neutron source, which is put down into the center of this core geometry. And what it does is it supplies a neutron flux that's of a high enough density to make up for the fact that the core density of the original fuel is not high enough in as a source of its own neutrons to allow for a self-sustaining reaction. So normally, when you have a core that is self-sustaining, you absorb those extra neutrons with some kind of a neutron absorption mechanism, which oftentimes are these cadmium control rods, which they push down into the stack in various locations. And that keeps the neutron flux low enough so that it can't go into a self-excited state.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have something that will never go into a self-excited state and you want to see what you can do with it, then you have to provide neutrons from an external source like this plutonium-beryllium mixture, which is known to be a very potent emitter of neutrons. So it's going to take a secondary source of neutron excitation or some other form of excitation to bring these partially spent what you might call fission byproducts, to a point where they could essentially take part in some kind of a reaction. That's the part that makes me raise my eyebrows. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying that it sounds like an inefficient and dangerous arrangement unless there's something there that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
But let's assume that it could be done. Well, if it could be done, then you get another year's worth of power output from the rods, which would normally be spent and discharged. And then you can essentially recore them with only 50% of the fuel that you had to begin with. That's a pretty economical system. So
yeah,
I don't know how realistic it is, but it grabbed my attention, and I actually started to look into it, but my friend, who is the nuclear physicist that I've worked with in a number of different projects, was not accessible today, which was a shame, because I would like to have been able to report his point of view on this.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe by next week I can get a hold of him.
Well, there seems to be an obsession and an addiction to technologies that produce explosions, heat, fire. You know, it's always a destructive method that's used to produce power, and it's always dangerous. And it seems to me that that's the preference. To maintain the controls that they maintain and to give them the power to meter it, and no pun intended, gives them license to meter it and charge outrageous fees. Now, this technology, if it's practical and can be implemented at a low cost, should eventually reduce to a minuscule amount the costs that people are now paying for energy. But, you know, I think nuclear energy is as insane as nuclear war. And there are those out there that are going to think I'm nuts for having said that, but it leads to the types of disasters that we're experiencing, whether they're over-exaggerated or they're underestimated and underreported. It really doesn't matter. The technology in and of itself is dangerous. And there
are
with
you on that, and I also support 100% your earlier remark concerning the fact that if it's something that's really dangerous, exotic, and difficult to control, then obviously it has to be kept in the hands of people who know exactly what they're doing. You would certainly never find old Mother Baker with a high-pressure water reactor in her basement producing electricity for nothing. That just wouldn't happen. But the interesting thing is, Tesla tried to point us in the direction where you could have totally benign sources of power available, which would not even have to be grid-related. Oh, but you can't have that because those are violations of conservation of energy. And so it becomes very clear to anybody that really has an open mind and who has spent some time investigating these things and thinking about them, that the real name of the game is keeping the source of available energy in the hands of the few, the high, and the mighty. The last thing they want is for Joe Public to have a safe and decentralized form of electrical power.
Mm-hmm. See, the few short pieces that were written by this alleged freelance journalist that appears to be operating from within the confines of U.S. naval intelligence circles, we'll say, and that name can be nothing more than a psychological operation, the title of it. You know, Jim Stone, Operation Jim Stone, we could call it, okay? I never read a word from this individual, and suddenly the guy's stuff is all over the world, at the top of the charts. It's being emailed to everybody. That's certainly a highly orchestrated operation going on. And the best planning in the world takes time. There's no way you can get this out, this information out overnight. And here we are, the fourth, maybe the fifth piece of nothing more than a few paragraphs. That's actually the longest piece that he released. It's dealing with the money factor already. We're back to the money, you see. And to me, it smacks of some kind of a psychological operation to divert attention from what's going on in regard to cap and trade and setting up of the next series of false flag events. Because I can tell you this, these attacks upon nuclear power plants are not over. They're plotting and planning their next move, and you know, we have to keep talking about it to let them know that we're aware of what's going on. We can see the writing on the wall. And what do they do? Suddenly, you know, we didn't have major earthquakes here. Oh, but they turned HAARP on and they chemtrailed us to death for 3 or 4 months straight. And now you've got abnormal flooding going on all over the Midwest, tornadoes, and you've got the Missouri River about to break all of its banks and decimate all the dams. If you listen to the propaganda that they're putting out, now this nuclear power plant in Fort Calhoun is underwater, they're saying. Okay, so what is this now? The preference: create a tsunami, create flooding to destroy these plants. It's a pretext for making up an excuse. So they can go in and sabotage the building and blame it on water. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You're dealing with psychopaths here. You're dealing with organized crime pretending that it's government. That's what we're dealing with here. And you mentioned Carter. That's one of the biggest traitors this country ever had sitting in the White House. And he was a product of the U.S. Navy himself, see? And it begs the question, why do we have to have military leaders in a civil office? You know, this is supposed to be civilians running the government. And there's supposed to be checks and balances. Oh, yeah, the checks and balances are make sure we have a military guy in there so that we can perpetuate wars.
Yeah, you know, but I know the real reason for that. First of all, It's the same explanation that is supporting the selection of Obama for president, despite the fact that there are international concerns about his legitimacy as a U.S. citizen. It's because of the fact that we're dealing with a private company called the United States, and it has its own bylaws. And those bylaws are essentially the Constitution that they have generated, which is not the Constitution that the Founding Fathers had put forth. And since the Senate is the board of directors for this corporation, they can put anybody they want in there, whether he's a U.S. senator or not, a U.S. citizen or not, because it has nothing to do with the normal criteria for commander-in-chief. What it has to do with is who the board of directors wants to see in there. I mean, you could put anybody in there as long as they okayed it. It has nothing to do with citizenship. And that's one of the reasons why all of this stuff doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, well, give me one reason,
Jim. Why isn't there a legitimate interest in the fact that we have a president in the office, the head office of the land, who essentially is not qualified?
Give me one reason why they, Jim. Jim, give me one reason why they put him in office. One good reason, other than he has no feelings for this country, right? He has no allegiance.
I think he has very, very negative feelings for this country.
Yeah, so the only good reason they put him in there was to destroy the country. Wouldn't you say that would be an accurate assessment of why that?
But he's doing a heck of a job.
doing that, right?
I mean, from that point of view.
Yeah. So that tells us a lot about the board of directors then, doesn't it?
You don't want me to really go there, do you? Because I have nothing but really, really negative comments and a whole lot of violent suggestions about what to do with all those things. Might not be good to have that on the air.
Well, I don't want to raise your blood pressure. Let's put it that way.
Oh, it's up.
You know, but no, I'm asking rhetorical questions here. You see, he's incompetent as far as what people expect the president of the republic, the constitutional republic of the United States of America to do, you see? But this is the hijacked version of that. It's called by the same name, the U.S. or America or the United States of America, but it's a corporate entity. It's run as a business by a bunch of criminals. So they just have one of their own in there. That's all.
Exactly.
That's all that is. So we can talk about science and we can talk about the truth about who's who. And it doesn't matter. It's just a cabal of criminals pretending to be our representatives, pretending to be our servants. And that doesn't solve the world's problems. That just compounds the world's problems. You know, there's a certain amount of extortion going on between the U.S. Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, and certain congressmen, being forced to comply with raising the debt ceiling. These guys, out of one side of their face and out of their rear ends, are telling the public that they're doing everything they can to cut back the deficit. The deficit is how this country's been operating since 1913. It's been operating under a deficit. Declared bankruptcy in 1933, absconding of the gold assets and likely most of the silver assets in 1934, and the declaration of emergency rule in 1935. All designed to infiltrate and destroy this country from within at the highest level. That's what's occurred. So when you're talking
You might as well throw in the most recent scandal, which is that they have been encouraging China to buy more debt than what the public is aware of, and the lure for that has been the sale, the secret sale, of all of our national parks and all of our wilderness areas to the Chinese.
Yeah.
And that's how these SOBs have been managing to raise additional money.
Well, they have no authority.
But now the plan is, and I just heard about this 2-3 days ago, that they're going to have what they call free trade zones within the national park systems and the other lands that used to be public lands. And they're going to set up Chinese communities right here on U.S. soil that are going to be governed by Chinese rule, just like they were like little miniature reservations like the Indians are supposedly on sovereign property. Well, the Chinese are going to be on sovereign soil, and they're going to have manufacturing centers and agricultural centers, which will be under their dominion, and they will be selling products to the United States just outside their allocated borders. And tell me that doesn't smell bad.
Well, you know,
you're going to wind up with millions of Chinese people living on our soil, building their own little industrial and agricultural and probably even mining facilities, and then forcing us to buy their products made with our natural resources.
Yeah, I know this is true because I've already seen these free trade zones. They're actually considered ports of entry in the state of Nebraska and Wisconsin. I mean, this is insane. They have these things set up already. You know how you see way stations along a highway as you're driving, and they'll tell all the trucks they have to pull off and get weighed, and I suppose they have to present their dossier or documentation of what they're carrying and where they're going with it and where they're coming from and all of this stuff, and they have to comply with they're looking to see if they've added or subtracted anything from their load. Okay, that's basically why those stations are there. And they're going to impose penalties or arrest somebody because they're going to monitor every single ounce of any retail sales or products that move from one place to another. It's data mining is what it is. But the very fact that they have these free trade zones implies that anybody from any country can enter that particular place. That it's being set up like that. So it's supporting what you're saying. I've already seen them. Who pays for that?
Well, yeah, because if you are awarded a passport to China, and let's say you are from, well, it doesn't matter where, the Mideast somewhere, you can suddenly use that to go to free trade zone number 34, which is sovereign Chinese soil. So now you've got these yo-yos that can fly deliberately into an area like that, and they will essentially be within the continental United States. You know as well as I do that if you have that kind of stuff going on, you're not going to be able to restrict everybody in one of those trade zones. People are going to slide in and out. Everybody that's playing that game is going to be susceptible to having their palm greased. It's going to be a real amazing situation. The only thing that I have to say about it is that I don't know how much it's going to take before the American people have had enough. But I think the day will come when they're just going to start finding bodies laying around with no particular explanation. And
that's happening now. That's happening now.
Well, I'm talking about very specific bodies. I'm not talking about the normal casualties on an annual basis.
Yeah. You're talking about names that people will recognize.
Yeah, well, those and also nationalities that people will recognize.
Any particular one?
I mean, I can't believe that America is not only dumbed down to the point that they are, you know, unilaterally, but that they've also had all of their spinal material removed as well. There must be some people left with testicles and spine. And I can't say it any more succinctly than that.
Yeah. Well, it's just another series of Ponzi schemes going on, and how the world economy is actually being run, despite what they tell us. You know, I was listening to the radio earlier today, and I heard the Treasury Secretary talking about, I don't know when this was recorded, if it was live or Memorex, you know, but he was saying something to the effect that the economy is looking up. And then I listened to a 2000 interview of Robert Rubin, who is now of Citibank fame, but this mill of characters that they bring out of Goldman Sachs and they put them either in the Federal Reserve or the U.S. Treasury so that they always know what's going on with the money supply and they can give them the money. That's exactly what happened with the bailouts, you see. But listening to the lies that came out of Rubin's mouth about the state of the economy as Clinton was giving our national top secret technologies to the Chinese, and Lord knows who else, while he was playing with his concubine and a cigar. You've got this spokesman out there that was just lying through his teeth about the economy, and he's criticizing, you know, the Bush administration. Actually, I think it was February of 2001 that this interview was recorded with Rubin. And he's blaming the policies that are occurring now in that time frame with the Republican Party in charge, as if they don't know what they're doing. Yet it's the same sequence of characters brought out of the same corporations that are still running the show. And totally absent of any responsibility for all the corruption that occurred under Clinton's administration. This is when this whole Russian ruble takedown began, during that time Clinton was the president. And Rubin was in charge, you see. And it's the entity that controls the Federal Reserve and that funds the black ops programs, regardless of what they say. People think that these appropriations go through Congress, that they vote this stuff in Congress and the Senate. You know, the House of Representatives might not be for it, but then they send it over to the Senate for their take. Is that how it's supposed to go? I thought if it didn't come out of the House of Representatives, it doesn't go to the Senate at all. But that's not the case. These guys start playing ping pong with these bills that they're creating. And the explanations that he was giving for what was happening to the economy was, oh man, I can't use the language on the radio, but you can imagine, folks. You just use your imaginations. Nothing could be further from the truth. And he was at the center with many of the other banks of all this financial corruption that was going on, the embezzlement of trillions of dollars. And it's still going on. There have been several documents, letters issued to Congress. The earliest I saw was April 14th of this year, that there were four steps that were going to be exercised to take control of the debt ceiling that could be used outside of the authority of Congress. This was in a letter from Tim Geithner to Harry Reid, that if they didn't raise the debt ceiling, he was going to use one or a combination of four options that they had. And the fourth option that he chose is actually the entity that's already controlling all of this stuff. So you have more doublespeak there. They're going to do this anyway, regardless of, you know, the Congress can vote 535 to nothing, all the way across the board, against raising the debt ceiling, and they're still going to do it. Because they're manipulating the entire stock market of the world and the exchange rates of the world through this agency that controls both the Federal Reserve and the United States Treasury. This is the games they're playing behind the scenes while they're creating all these diversions of earthquakes and tsunamis and nuclear meltdowns and the destruction of river dams and on and on and on and on. It's just,
but no matter how they play the game, because of the fact that they are using debt as money, it's eventually going to stop. I mean, I would like to see it stop right away and get it over with, but all these things that they're coming up with are really just to buy time. But, you know, the rest of the world doesn't want to buy U.S. debt. Of course, China is doing it to protect the enormous investment they already have. And, you know, frankly, they take over the whole country. They might do a far better job than the president and all his little cronies in running this place. You know, but that isn't really what we want to see, I don't believe.
No.
And yet it's all set up and running. I mean, it's already happening. So, you know, don't be surprised when you start seeing, you know, militias roaming the streets, and they all happen to be Orientals in Chinese uniforms. There's already over 1 million Chinese troops on U.S. soil right now in various camps and forts around the country. Now, do you really and truly think they're here rolling firecrackers? I mean, I think they're here because a plan has already been put into effect. I mean, if China wasn't part of the game, you're not going to tell me that they'd have people here to that extent, you know, with U.S. authorities actually being against the idea. Obviously, they're involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, in the deepest part of my being, Jim, in my conscious awareness of myself and that which I seek to remember or recall, which is somehow masked and filtered out through this third-dimensional matrix that we call planet Earth, I cannot recall, maybe on some level we all agreed to come to a prison planet or a planet run by psychopaths to become slaves. But I can't remember where I consciously, on some level, in spirit, in a higher level of consciousness realm, by the way, I can't recall saying, yeah, you know what? Sounds like an interesting place to go. I want to go to planet Earth. I want to live in a physical body. And I want to be a slave to a bunch of murdering, conniving psychopaths. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I look at life that deeply to try to understand where I agreed to do that. Do you have, maybe I missed the boat. Maybe I'm not as conscious as I think I am. Have you ever recalled that in your existence? And you're a deep thinker. You're a very spiritual person, a very creative person. Do you recall any part of your being condescending to that level?
Well, I don't recall all the choices I made before being materialized, so to speak. But one thing I can tell you is I've definitely been through this before. And I think that the right way to look at this isn't whether or not we agreed, you know, to come here and revel in the bliss of a slave world. I think that it's really about some kind of a pivotal decision that's coming, whereby if we go in one direction, you will reap certain benefits, and if you go in the other direction, then all hell will break loose. I mean, the whole universe is really about choices and the effects that those choices have on the evolution of our souls. And I think that, you know, the people that come here with good intentions come here fully realizing that it may not go in the right direction or the positive direction, let's call it that. But they labor their whole life in anticipation and in the hope that it might go that way. And if it does, then they'll have something to contribute or they'll have some way of participating. If it goes the other way, as we used to say back in Jersey City, your ass will be grass anyway.
Yeah, that's an excellent way of describing it. It just shows that there are these two opposite paradigms. That there's a dichotomy there, which is really how the universe balances itself, but it's as if you're saying, and I'm not saying you personally, but anyone who would say that, it's as if you're saying that it's the lesser of two evils. Why can't there be this state in the middle where there's consciousness and progress? For some reason,
because I think that that's part of what you're alluding to. Really, can't be in the middle because there's no such thing as a third choice. The third choice is kind of like sitting on the fence, you might say. And there's plenty of people who do that. But those are the deadwood in our society, aren't worth anything one way or the other.
I don't mean in the middle in the sense of being part of one and part of the other. Let's say above it. Why can't there be this realm above it?
Well, I think there is.
On the left and on the right.
A place. And in some respects, if you think about the fact that the rest of the world seems to operate that from the spiritual level down, then it may very well have already been decided on that level, and we're just waiting to see how it manifests on this level. It's just like when a person suddenly comes down with cancer or a heart disease or something like that. It didn't just appear. There was something wrong in his astral body, in his spiritual self, for a long time, and finally it manifests on the physical plane. It's the same thing with history and with the decisions that we have to make as a society. I believe that there is a warring faction, in the spiritual side of things, which is trying to determine which way it's going to go. Well, maybe that's already been determined on that level, and now it's manifesting on this level. We just have to wait and see. But I think the important thing is that the sincere people that want to see something positive happen can't ever throw in the towel. You just can't ever give up.
Yeah.
Because the minute you do, you know the outcome.
Yeah.
It's true.
The reason I asked that question is quite obvious, because and I've said this before, if this system was so sacred and so holy and so righteous, why does it operate out of this position of lack? We need more money to do this. The only way we can solve this problem is with more money, which is just nothing but a perpetual lie that's told to us. Because despite the trillions, the hundreds of trillions, even quadrillions of dollars that they've stolen or that they've created out of thin air, which is nothing but a series of hoaxes perpetrated on the rest of humanity, they don't have enough. They have to ask for more. Where does the money go?
You could ask that question with respect to anything. Let's look at the so-called war on cancer. That's only been going on for the last 50 years or so. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, we're almost there. But yet, there's more cancer every year than there ever was. There's no succinct cure. There's only hiding or suppressing the symptoms and extending the life a little further type of thing. But it's a $1 billion industry. I don't even know how many billions per year.
It's a trillion.
If you ask the same question there, where does that money go?
It's a trillion and a half, at least.
Of certain individuals.
Yeah, the cancer industry is a trillion and a half, at least, of profit.
Well, okay. So where does all that money go? It doesn't go into research, I can tell you that. The cure for cancer has been around for at least 60 years. And
yes,
there's been many of them, not just one.
Yes, and the understanding of what causes it, too. And what,
for sure.
The different methods of delivering it as well have been discovered and revealed. So it's the same thing. Whether we're talking about energy, we're talking about power production, we're talking about nuclear fission. You know, nuclear fusion was something that was the big buzzword a few years ago, if you remember. Then they got into this term of free energy, and everybody's being suppressed. And anybody who, if they haven't been killed, they've been totally put out of business and left penniless and died of starvation and disease, or just broken heart because they found something that could benefit mankind. See, people don't look at this in the greater context, you know, in a cosmic sense, and look at the purpose of life and who we are and what we are and why we're here. You know, I certainly didn't come here to be controlled by a cabal of liars that tell us that we have peak oil, meaning that there's, you know, we've reached the maximum. There's no more oil to be had. How do they keep finding it? How do they keep putting it out, right, if that was the case? Of course, they're lying to us. We have to raise the price now because it's harder to get.
I just read an article this morning that in the United States alone, in Wyoming, Utah, and I forget what the third state was.
Colorado.
Anyway, maybe it was Colorado. There are oil reserves to the extent of 1.5 trillion barrels, and they're not even allowed to explore it, because the idea is to keep us hooked into the Middle Eastern oil supply and the cabal that runs it. I bet you dimes to donuts that if you were to dig into the situation in all these oil-producing countries, you'd find the same vermin that are behind everything else wind up owning huge amounts of those oil-producing facilities or the country itself or God only knows what. But it's the same bunch everywhere.
Yeah, and to just pick up pocket change, they raid the pension funds of corporations and the unions. Teachers are the latest victim of that fraud. And of course, the communities that those teachers teach in, because the communities are paying the taxes that raise the funds to pay their salaries and to build the schools. Suddenly, all of a sudden, they have to tear down schools. They used to leave schools up for 100 years, Jim. And they were, back when they were built correctly, they would last. Maybe they might be an eyesore to look at, but they would tear them down and put up a new one, and 20 years later, tear that down and put up another one. It's all related to their money laundering schemes on Wall Street.
Well, not only that, but I mean, let's face it, in Africa and in parts of Asia, they have school on a regular basis, even up to university level, which is being held outdoors in cheap tents. It has nothing to do with the building. It's the quality of the education. So I don't care if you put it in the most modern building on the planet or if you have it in a rickety old tent. If the teachers are no darn good and the subject matter is third grade level, where's the benefit? Why bother with a new school? A friend of mine just told me this morning that in the time that the Constitution was actually written, and I'm not talking about the phony one, I'm talking about the real one, that the average grade level of the individuals who composed and understood that document and designed the English text would be the equivalent of the 130th grade by contrast to our present system. But the daily rag that everybody fights for to read the news is written at the third grade level. Now, what the heck does that tell you about the educational system? I mean, I happen to know a little bit about it from the standpoint of physics and mathematics, and I can tell you that so many courses have been deleted, which were once standard. you know, like in the time of Tesla, for instance. What that man was required to know to become an electrical engineer, you would only begin to approach in a postdoctoral educational course of some sort in the modern world. And yet that was standard high school and college material in the time that Tesla went to the technical school in Prague. So, you know, the whole world is becoming dumber. It's not becoming smarter. And it's a trend. You know, it's continuing. So I don't really know why they have to bother with the school buildings.
Yeah.
Why not just eliminate it all again?
Well, let me close out the show tonight by sharing with you, since you were talking about schools, I came across something. This is, of course, this is the intelligence apparatus putting out their usual email spin on so-called research, okay? I'm going to skip over some of this, but this is referring to a book written by a woman, or it's in the making. This book is a forthcoming biography of Barack Obama's father, written by a woman by the name of Sally Jacobs, who writes for the Boston Globe. She's a reporter who's writing a book about this. And this is a continuation of this Hegelian dialectical lie being perpetrated on the world as to his origins. I'm going to quote something here. In the spring of 1961, President Obama's father, that's the first lie right there, okay, revealed a plan for his unborn son, that's a lie, that might have changed the course of American political history. That's a lie. The elder Barack H. Obama, a sophomore at the University of Hawaii, had come under scrutiny by federal immigration officials. Okay, now, there's three lies in that first half of the sentence right there. He's not the elder, okay? He wasn't even at the school, and he was purported to be a graduate student. Now he's a sophomore. Okay, so he's an undergraduate student now who didn't graduate, so he couldn't have gone to Harvard, not having graduated with a degree to get his master's degree, as alleged. Okay? I mean, yeah, I'm just putting a little bit of logic and remembering what was said. I researched this for 3 years, Jim. Although his new wife, next lie, Ann Dunham, next, that's another lie because that was not her name on the Soviet ship that she went to Australia on. She was using the name Sophia Maduna. So there's another lie. Was 5 months pregnant with their child. She wasn't pregnant at all. She didn't give birth to him. There's another lie. The elder Obama, that's a lie, declared that they intended to put their child up for adoption. That's a lie. They didn't have a child. It's all a lie. Everything I've just read to you is nothing but lies. Subject got his this is supposed to be the intelligence report from the INS. Subject got his USC wife, Hapai, Hawaiian for pregnant, and although they were married, they do not live together, and Miss Dunham is making arrangements with the Salvation Army to give the baby away, according to a memo with the Honolulu office of what was then called the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service. Total lies. I could go on, but this is how they're portraying this character. Then they go into, he pursued his PhD program. Wait a minute, he's a sophomore and he leaves the school and goes to Harvard to work on a PhD? Who are they trying to fool? Who are they kidding here? Are we that brain dead that we don't see the lies in this, Jim?
Well, between you and me, I would never have caught any of that for the very simple reason that I wouldn't have read the book.
Oh, this but isn't the book. Yeah, this is the press release regarding it, okay? This isn't the book. It says a forthcoming book.
Oh, well.
And I don't believe that either. That's a lie. It's just something to put people's consciousness on this ruse, trying to give it, its last breath. It's already gone through its primal screen. This is the last breath, just hanging on. You know, and this book is going to be entitled The Other Barack, The Bold and Reckless Life of President Obama's Father. Even the title is a lie.
You might as well be talking about Scrooge McDuck.
Or Pee Wee. No, I don't want to defame Pee Wee Herman. I like Paul Rubens, actually. You know?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty fictitious situation, to say the least.
Not to mention that they put a photograph that I analyzed in my Three Stooges article. They put this photograph up as somehow adding credibility to the story. It's a Photoshop job from beginning to end. And you can look at their hands on it. They look like animal paws.
Well, you know, maybe they're in the midst of shape-shifting when they took the photo.
Exactly. They're shape-shifting in other photos. So this is the consciousness that they want to create. This is the mindset, which is really based on nothing. I mean, this is all illusion. They're creating belief systems in people. And, you know, when I don't know how much surfing you do on the Internet or how much research you do, but you go to a particular page, you see this character's picture everywhere you go. Like, I mean, talk about being subliminal. But what's the purpose of it? Other than, you know, we're supposed to bow down to this guy and pray to him, shine his shoes, what?
Well, isn't that the same tactic that the Nazis used in World War II with the images of various individuals that were promoted all over the place?
Yeah, and the Nazis were the Zionists, okay? They're the same ones. They were the agents for the bankers. They're the agents for the same characters that run the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury today and run the businesses on Wall Street and all the corporations worldwide. And they certainly run the media and all the entertainment distractions that people call professional sports and the arts, the movie industry, and it's just over and over and over this steady diet of imagery and illusion. But I mean, you know the basic story about Obama, right? You hear the stuff that they're putting in this article. This is describing what's going to come out in a book. And it lies in the face of what this character wrote. Now, I mean, is this going to try to get him to perjure himself somehow? You publish a book written by somebody else, number one. There's his first out right there. William Ayers actually came out. So many people said it's his syntax of writing. He must have written a book. He actually came out and said that in a speech publicly, that he wrote the book, that Obama didn't write it. And it's just filled with lies. And then here we have a whole new set of lies that dispute the original set of lies that he put out in two books. You know, and people can't see this. And, of course, the names of these reporters are made up, too, the names of these authors. Okay, authors can have pen names. That's what they call it. But you know, you do some research on these names and they show up again with military intelligence. Show up in the same place. So they're alleging that these are actual official government documents. That makes the story believable suddenly, right? Well, then what about his admission that he was born in Kenya? So he's lying about that. And I say he's lying about both. They're lying to us about what happened in Japan. They're lying to us about what's going on in this country. They're lying to us about what's going on in the entire world. I don't know about you, but I'm sick of it. And I'm not going to take
sick of it. But I'm not going to take their trying to get people to see this at least on, you know, one night a week, you and I, for the last 4.5 years. And I know you've been working around the clock doing the same thing. And there are a few people elsewhere that have similar intentions. But boy, I'll tell you, it's an uphill battle. It's an uphill battle to change that basic program.
Yeah, I know. Well, Jim, we're out of time, but it's been interesting tonight, and certainly we've given people food for thought. If you're interested in finding out what's really going on in the nuclear industry, you got to pay attention, but you've got to do some research on your own. We're not asking you to believe anything. I'm quoting what was published by another journalist, another alleged journalist, quoting passages from a book that is totally 180 degrees in the other direction of what the current usurper in Washington, D.C. published in his own memoirs. The Salvation Army is now into taking children for people. They must be getting desperate. I thought it was just washing machines and stuff like that, but an old clothes. Oh, baby? Yeah, we'll take the baby. We can sell her or him. What's the name? We'll let you know when we think one up. Have you ever heard anything so preposterous in your life?
No, but I'm getting numb to the whole situation, you know.
Yeah.
It can't get too much worse, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know, it says Obama's father left and his mother, yeah, left Obama and his mother when the boy was 2 to pursue a PhD program. So he didn't even graduate from school, they're saying. He went from a bachelor's degree. Initially, they said he was a foreign exchange student and a graduate student.
Yeah, but see, they didn't tell you what age he did all that at. I mean, the man is such a genius, he probably accomplished his first degree when he was 2 or 3 years old.
Well,
that puts everything in perspective.
Yeah, his story was that he came over here in 1959, though they claimed that the Kennedy-funded airlift from Kenya occurred in 1958. So how he got here after the fact is beyond me. And then
he stopped off for refueling in New Guinea.
Papua New Guinea, that's right. Well, I appreciate your contribution to the show tonight. And I wish you a great weekend, and I look forward to your next visit on Evident Footprints next Friday. Try to keep some sanity, Jim, and keep me posted with anything you learn about this new use for spent nuclear fuel rods, if you would. I'd be interested if you find anything real and tangible in that.
Well, I'll explore it to the best of my ability, and I'll let you know what comes to the surface. How's that?
Okay, very good. All right. In the meantime, you have a great weekend, and I'm sure we'll be talking. So,
yeah, I'm sure too.
All right. Good night. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. And tonight's guest, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and now skeptic, Jim Murray. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBS Radio. We had Seth Hendrick on the sound, and I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.